Good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto. I'm the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. Members of the public, thank you for joining us. You can visit our committee website to see an agenda, meeting materials, et cetera, past meetings, which are useful as well. So please feel free to check that out. We're going to start by having Mr. Doeslin take the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, present.
Representative Daymuth.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Representative Waslowick.
Waslowick, present.
And Representative Wolgamott.
President.
All right, thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you, members. So we actually have two sets of minutes to approve. So our Vice Chair, Representative Pryor, if you can move approval of the minutes from March 31st.
So moved.
Thank you. Members, any additions or corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the March 31 minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. Those minutes are approved. And then the minutes from April 1st, if you could move approval of those, Representative Pryor.
So moved.
Thank you. And any additions or corrections, members? Not hearing any. All in favor of approval of the April 1st minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes too. Thank you so much. We have two sets of minutes approved. And many thanks, as long as we're doing that, members, for your attentiveness and for your time on Friday. We had a joint hearing with the Public Safety Committee. That was something I'd been hoping to do for a long time. And I know this is an incredibly busy time for everybody. I guess I want to make sure to thank our incredible staff as well. But I really appreciated that. So today we have several bills up informationally only. I'm expecting this to be a relatively short hearing. I'll try to knock on wood as I say that, but just for your planning purposes. We have three bills relating to capital investment projects. I want to note that there's a bill on the agenda, HF 2369, a bill of mine that I'm pulling from the agenda for today. Am expecting to have that come up either today or tomorrow, along with that's a bill, again, a capital investment a proposal, and one HF 4666, which is the administration's capital investment proposal. Again, we're just hearing these informationally. So I'll be on the lookout for that. We'll post that right away. But in the meantime, we have three proposals relating to capital investments that are connected to our area, and we want to hear those. And then we will do a walkthrough of the budget proposal in our area that I'm offering to the committee, and have clarifying questions, and then move on from there. And I'll talk more as we get to that. But first, we will start with a bill from Representative Schumacher. And again, all three of these are informational only. The bill is currently before the Capital Investment Committee. This is House File 4417. And Representative Schumacher, a pleasure to have you. I'm pretty sure that I have you on here someplace.
Yes.
On my Zoom screen. Okay. Oh, there we go. Pleasure. And please present your bill. I'm glad to have you with the committee.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. Thank you for having the informational hearing on this bill that we have today. This one is a capital investment request. We had the hearing in bonding committee last week on it, establishing a child care center in the city of La Vergne. We have with us today Mayor Pat Boston of the city of La Vergne and Holly Sammons, the economic developer for the city of La Vergne. And really, this is something it's been a project that's been years in the making. There's been a lot of effort to try and have it be a more of a private enterprise that got this done, and they made requests and opened it up to the public for several years to try and get something moving forward here, and that just didn't seem to take flight. And so they have worked with a nonprofit organization to get something up and going, and the request that they have in front of the legislature this year is to get things up and running to make it possible and feasible to be sustainable for the region. And so with that, I'll turn it over to the testifiers to give you the nitty gritty of it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Schumacher. And so Mayor Boston, we'll start with you.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. Thank you so much for taking time today to hear our bill. In 2016, the City of Laverne started looking at what were their biggest impediments for economic growth within the City of Laverne. Through numerous visits through our Economic Development Director, Holly Sammons, and visiting our businesses, the number one issue affecting our businesses that was hampering economic growth was a lack of childcare. That was in 2016. And in the slide that you have that we issued back in 2016, we had 56 providers with 662 slots. One of the biggest issues we've seen is just the number of childcare in-home facilities that have retired from being childcare providers in our city and county. We have zero childcare centers in Laverne and Rock County. So one of the big issues that we've been working on is how can we get this going? It was always one of those things where a developer or somebody coming into our Economic Development Authority that was looking to build a childcare center or remodel a building to a childcare center was they had enough money to buy the facility and remodel it and make payments. And they could do childcare, but they didn't have enough money to provide an adequate wage and or benefits to their caretakers. Or they could do the caretakers, but they didn't have the facility that they could afford to do the bricks and mortar. Like I said, we've been doing this, working on this for 6 years. And I will turn it over to our Economic Development Director, Holly Sammons, for further input.
Thank you. And I should probably note, so we can see screen with just the one picture, and hopefully, presumably, I guess you'll bring up if there's more photos in the slideshow. Yeah, there we go. But Ms. Sammons, yeah, please proceed.
Yes, thank you. So we've identified that childcare is an essential part of economic development, but it's also a critical part of the social infrastructure of a healthy community. We've noticed that employers are having difficulty attracting and retaining staff due to the lack of availability of childcare. We've also noticed that it's been difficult to recruit and attract young families to move here and live here because they are choosing to live in Brandon, South Dakota, or Sioux Falls, where childcare options are more readily available. And we are right on the border of Iowa and South Dakota. To prove this point, in 2016, we had 56 childcare providers in Rock County that provided 662 childcare slots. That number declined to 37 providers in 2019, and we are now down to 28 providers in 2022. So we went from 662 childcare slots down to 336 childcare slots. Local leaders are committed to facilitating the creation of a local childcare center that will serve the needs of Laverne and Rock County. It has been determined that the private sector alone is unable to acquire and build a childcare center based on costs, local rates, and wages. The City of Laverne recently acquired a 30,000 square foot facility, which is well suited to be repurposed as a childcare center. However, local resources alone cannot support the significant investment needed for this one-time capital investment and renovation for a 186-seat childcare center. In our preliminary planning, it has been determined that it'll take about $3.477 million in state funds is requested for the acquisition, renovation, furnishing, and equipping of a childcare facility in which to provide childcare services for Laverne and Rock County. This is that one-time capital investment that will launch the facility and put it into a good position to succeed. The City of Laverne is committed to supporting the ongoing operations once the center is established to ensure the sustainability and success of the center. The city will own the building and will sign a management contract with a nonprofit entity and lease the building to that nonprofit for $1 per year. The nonprofit will be the entity that will acquire the childcare license, and they will carry out the daily operations to offer the childcare services. This will allow the nonprofit to operate the center without the brick and mortar cost or any debt service on the acquisition or remodel. The city and the nonprofit will partner with other local businesses and organizations to help support the center and address the need for critical childcare in our community. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much, Ms. Sammons. Members, if there are questions, and we can maybe go back to seeing one another, unless folks have want to be looking at the slideshow, but we'll see if there are questions members have. Yeah, thanks. I will perhaps ask if maybe to Representative Schumacher or to the testifiers. I know that there are several. I know that access to childcare and early learning is much more challenging in Greater Minnesota. It seems like maybe affordability is more of an issue in the metro, and access, just making sure that there are available slots in Greater Minnesota. I think that there are a number of proposals to provide funding for a variety of places in Greater Minnesota. And just wondering if Representative Schumacher or the testifiers have connected at all with those other efforts. I think the League of Greater Minnesota Cities has several proposals regarding that. Not sure if you've been tracking or connected. Maybe I'll go to the bill's author first, Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that Ms. Sammons would be the best to discuss that, as she's been more involved with the nonprofit organization that's getting this going.
Yeah, good. Ms. Sammons.
Yep, we're certainly aware of all the other resources and programs. We are fully engaged with First Children's Finance on the planning and the implementation and the operations. We're doing some financial modeling. They have a lot of good training options available for us. We are aware of the other grant programs available. None of them individually seem to be a large enough solution to this one-time major investment. You know, $100,000 here or there is great for additional items, but we need just that one large capital investment to get it up and running and functional to begin with. And we're certainly interested in all those other programs for sustainability, for ongoing needs, for other sideline items. But none of them alone really solve our initial capital investment problem.
Thank you. And we definitely had lots of conversations in our committee about the needing to have the funding that meets the scope, the scale of the challenge. So thank you. Yeah, I'm Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the questions we always have, especially when you're considering a budget item, is it scalable? If you had less than the full amount that you're requesting from the capital investment, would you be able to put together other kind of funding to still make it happen? Or is it pretty much like just need that initial investment to start anything?
Ms. Sammons, I bet, but we'll see if anybody else jumps in. Okay, that's it. Ms. Sammons, so it looks like it's on you.
Sure. We were able to purchase the facility for $515,000, which seemed like a wonderful investment. It appraises at well over $1 million. So that ability to acquire that size of facility at that price makes it kind of a no-brainer from our side as far as a local building. However, we did look at the large facility, knowing it is larger than initially planned. We evaluated starting it with just say 120 seats or 140 seats. You know, does it make sense to do 2/3 of the room now and come back and do that other third later? And we had our engineer do some preliminary planning. And there is a very narrow margin between doing a portion of it now and coming back 5 years from now and doing the other portion. I think it was maybe a $200,000 or $300,000 spread. And so in our opinion, the disruption, the price increase, the logistics, the timing, it really wasn't worth our time and effort to try and save that last few hundred. Wasn't the deal breaker for us. And we would much rather have a fully functional facility versus even just the layout of the rooms, coming back and adding an infant room or coming back and adding a toddler room while you're operating a daycare center with infants and toddlers in the building every day. The cost benefit analysis really didn't prove to be much more beneficial to do it in phases. So we have looked at that phase approach, but I guess just based on some numbers and timelines and logistics, it was kind of determined that it was probably best to do it all at once.
Was a prior follow-up?
Just then a brief follow-up that I understand that you did lots of surveys and talked to your community. So the number of slots then that will be available, because this is it's a fairly large center. Is it over time, do you think you'll be able to fill all the slots, or is the sense that the demand is there and if you can get it done, open up the center, the families will come?
Ms. Sammons.
We do believe the demand is there. And yes, there may be some phased approach to opening. Maybe we will open one room of each until they get to max capacity. And a lot of, once we have our staff hired, that will determine when we can bring that next classroom online. A lot of it has to be strategically planned as far as cash flow. But yes, we do believe the demand is there based on the number of slots that we've declined through our daycare study. We've done a daycare study about every 3 years. We do believe the demand is there. And the in-home providers are no longer in it for 30 years. They're in it because they can't find their own childcare. They're willing to do it with their own children until their children are in school. And so we do see a lot of turnover on the in-home provider side. And availability is one thing, but consistency is another thing that I think our business community is looking for. Just that consistent, steady, no closures, no sick kids, not closing in the middle of a family season. Just that predictability and stability is needed as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Mr. Chair,
prior quick, yeah.
I do realize I have just one more question because we're talking about the business of childcare and the childcare center. The last thing is staff.
Yeah, absolutely. We're working closely with First Children's Finance. We realize the success of the center depends greatly on our staff. I believe we have passionate and qualified people within our community. However, most important is that culture and that leadership. We want to be able to pay a decent wage to retain staff, to attract staff. We don't want to train a childcare provider and lose them to the school because they get paid twice as much and can get benefits. So we're well aware that our cash flow model on the operations side has to pay a decent wage and has to create that culture and that climate of a very professional, well-run facility. And a lot of that just comes down to the management. So our hope is to be able to support the center so they can pay the decent wages needed to attract and retain the qualified staff that they need to be successful.
Okay, good. Thanks, Representative Pryor, for allowing me to cut things off a little bit. Representative Gameth, moving to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Schumacher, thank you for bringing this forward. I appreciate the testimony that we've heard from your testifiers. Ms. Sammons just answered the question that I had regarding staffing, which is such a great need, but more of just a comment. Going from 662 providers just a few short years ago down to just 28 in your community really highlights the need that we have across the state of Minnesota, specifically for your community. And that's why having flexible choices for our families and for our littlest ones to get the care that they need is so important. So again, just more of a comment, but thank you, Representative Schumacher, for bringing this forward.
And we maybe, Representative Damon, should clarify, I think it was 660-some slots down to 300-some slots. So sort of the number of slots was cut in half and the number of providers cut in half. But maybe Ms. Sammons or somebody, yeah. I may have misheard you, but I thought you were saying 600-some slots down to 20-some, or in any case, but a massive loss. I mean, half of the number of slots and half the number of providers, from what I heard. So just to clarify that. Let's see if there are other questions or comments from members at all. And if not, this seems really innovative and terrific to be pursuing, we're exploring a lot of options in our committee. This reminds me, I should note of a couple of other proposals that we've heard over time of just a real desperate need. And when we hear about half the slots disappearing, there's a real need here. So, Representative Schumacher, we'll give you the final word on your bill.
Oh, thank you again, Mr. Chair and the committee, for taking the time to hear the proposal today. Appreciated the questions here and. Know that this is something that has been years in the making for this, and the community has been doing a lot of work to get that going. Of course, being a border community, anytime we can do more to keep people living in the area and working and using their tax dollars here, the better off we all are. And so really good use of using a building that from a business that had gone out of business in the community and revitalizing that so it didn't sit empty, and just really glad to bring this today and for the committee's time to hear it.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher, and best of luck to you in capital investments. We send good early childhood, early care and learning vibes your way and to your to the team in Laverne, and thank you for your work. So good stuff. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. So next we have Representative Fredericks, House File 3692. And again, this bill, the series of bills we're hearing informationally only, this bill is also the possession of capital investment. Representative Fredericks, so glad to have you with us, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 3692 is all about children's museums because they're awesome. And so what we've seen as we come out of the pandemic, that more and more people are trying to get out of their house. And what's an amazing way to do that is by going to their local children's museum. These are places where people, both kids and adults alike, can have that experiential learning piece. Down in Mankato, there was just an exhibit where it showed power. It was all about power and energy and the generation of energy and how it gets distributed down to a person's home. And they had these little Lego communities built up, and you could see, and you had to little push a little button, and you could see lights go along and just see how our energy network works. And it was super cool. And I was able to bring my kids there, and it was amazing. And so what this bill specifically does is it says there are 7 children's museums in greater Minnesota that wants to be able to expand the services that they're able to provide, that they see that the turnout is getting bigger and bigger as we come out of the pandemic, and they want to do more. And so there's different the 7 different children's museums that this bill would benefit have different requests specifically, but it is about that expansion of services, that they're recognizing that their community needs more than what they're currently able to provide, and this is how we're hoping to get it done. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testimony.
Terrific. So we have Ms. Miles with us, and please identify yourself for the record and then proceed. Glad to have you with us.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee, and thank you to Representative Frederick for your energy and for introducing, and to Bolden, Wolgamott, and Daymuth on this committee for co-authoring our bills. My name is Cassandra Miles, Executive Director of Great River Children's Museum, and I am really happy to be here today speaking on behalf of 6 of those 7 children's museums in greater Minnesota. Our bill is separate from Rochester, who's also on the call. You'll hear from them. So this bill is a request of Great River Children's Museum in St. Cloud. It includes Duluth Children's Museum, the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, Mankato, the Judy Garland and Children's Museum in Grand Rapids, Otter Cove Children's Museum in Fergus Falls, Wonder Trek Children's Museum in Brainerd, Baxter. Children's museums, as Representative Frederick mentioned, play a critical role in the early development of children who learn through play and exploration. Our museums are community hubs for both informal and standards-based learning that engages kids and their caring adults through exhibits and programs, field trips, and special events. Each of these museums offer experiences that are unique to our community, highlighting local history, regional industry, and culture. Our coalition's joint request of $32 million represents an investment in play-filled learning and early childhood development for all children. The funds will be used to support critical infrastructure needs in both buildings and exhibits, allowing each museum to better meet the needs of our communities. Importantly, this investment will provide 5 times the economic impact through direct, indirect spending, as well as driving job creation. But more importantly, the investment will create spaces that both supplement and complement classroom learning in an intentional way that strengthens skills needed for 21st century living. The mental health and well-being of our youngest community members is at the forefront of our minds, and the role of children's museums has evolved. Children and families need safe spaces for positive parent-child interactions, free from the stressors of work, school, and home, and combined with the opportunity to connect with others through the simple happiness that play can evoke. Together, our museums serve 500,000 children and families annually, including visitors from every county in Minnesota and from across the United States and around the world. Children's museums drive tourism, increase social capital, and improve the quality of life in the communities that we serve. Research shows that when family and children are deciding on their travel plans, they're more likely to visit a community with a children's museum. And finally, over the course of the pandemic, children's museums have become an even more critical community asset serving families, particularly families in need, as many now seek educational opportunities outside of their home and school. Support for this bill is truly an investment in the future of Minnesota's children and families, and an investment in playful learning, joy, and healing that support mental health in children and their caring adults alike. Thank you for your time today, and I'll entertain questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Miles. I'm glad to have you with us, and thanks for your work. I hadn't quite realized about the series of museums all over the state, and so glad that the kids have access to those opportunities. Looking to see if we have questions or comments, members. Looking to see Representative Wolkomat. I wonder if we might hear from you, because I knew that one of these museums is in nitty gritty Granite City. So Representative Wolkomat, please.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to voice my support for this legislation. I'm very proud to be a co-author with Representative Frederick, and I just wanted to take a moment to commend Ms. Miles and everybody on her team for their hard work, not only in advocating for this bill, but in advocating for life-changing opportunities and experiences for our children and families here in St. Cloud. And like I said, this bill has my full support. Members, I really hope we'll do everything we can to support this legislation and get it over the finish line to further empower the work being done by Ms. Miles and her team here in St. Cloud and by our children's museums all throughout the state of Minnesota. So thank you, Ms. Miles. Thank you, Representative Frederick and members. I ask for your full support for this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Wolkomat. Members, any other questions or comments? Just looking to see if there are hands that are up. And not seeing any, but this is just terrific. And Representative Frederick, if you can please close us out then. Any comments you have?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that, as we've heard, children's museums across the state are an amazing space for experiential learning for both kids and adults alike. And I just appreciate the committee's interest in the topic. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Frederick. And we wish you the very best before the Capital Investment Committee. Please keep us posted on your progress over there. And we have then a bill that is connected to this bill, as Miles explained. This is about one of the children's museums. Representative Bolden, you are up with House File 4061. And this bill is currently in the Workforce and Business Development Committee, I gather. And so again, we're hearing information. So Representative Bolden, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so we will continue the topic of awesome children's museums. So thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill today. The Children's Museum of Rochester is requesting $4 million in state funds to expand and renovate their current space located at the Apache Mall in Rochester. The project estimate includes pre-design, design, and construction of new and existing spaces, as well as the design, fabrication, and installation of hands-on exhibits to complete the new addition, which also includes a large outdoor green space. The museum's current space is about 10,000 square feet, of which about 8,500 square feet are dedicated to exhibits and programming space, with the remaining 1,500 square feet used for storage and office space. This expansion will provide an additional square footage of 7,300 square feet dedicated to more hands-on exhibits. After opening in 2020, the Children's Museum of Rochester saw a great success, exceeding every expectation, and they've already outgrown their space with over 50% more visitors than projected. I was just there a couple of weeks ago and can verify that this is an excellent resource in our community, and these additional funds will allow them to grow to better meet the needs of the children and families in Rochester. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Lindsay Hemker, who's the development director, to share a bit more. Thank you.
Ms. Hemker, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Bolden, for authoring and introducing our bill today. Good morning. My name is Lindsay Hemker. I'm the development manager here at the Children's Museum of Rochester.
Ms. Hemker, can I just pause you for a second? There's a kind of a flutter in your talking. I don't know if the connection is a little bit rough. We may be able to make it. I think it was coming through decently, but let's see if we can.
Can you hear me okay now? Maybe I'll just come closer to the.
Yeah, it still has that, but I think, I mean, I can understand you, and so members may be a tiny bit frustrating, but I think we can probably proceed. I don't know. It was having kind of, at least that was what I was hearing. If I can try this again.
Okay.
Yeah, just sort of scratchy, pretty deep. Not sure how to describe it, but.
Grab some headphones?
Possibly. You know, why don't we give it a try? And members just kind of filter it. Yeah. All right, we'll just pause everyone. And I may ask, Representative Bolden, can you just tell us, it looks like this bill was heard in capital investment as well and workforce development at this point, or?
It was, Mr. Chair. We have been on the road with this bill in several committees, so yes.
Okay, yeah, good. All right, Ms.
Are you able to hear me a little bit clearer?
That is definitely better, Ms.
Okay.
Thank you.
I apologize, Chair. Thank you
no
so
problem.
Much.
No problem. Yeah.
So like I mentioned, my name is Lindsay Hemker from the Children's Museum of Rochester. We're also known as SPARC, and I'm speaking to House File 4061, which is a $4 million request for an indoor and outdoor expansion and improvements to our current Children's Museum. In August of 2020, we opened in Apache Mall of Rochester, expecting to support around 40,000 visitors in the first year. And even during the COVID-19 pandemic to date, under a year and a half later, we have welcomed over 90,000 visitors, more than doubling our anticipated reach. Our mission is to enrich the lives of young learners by creating shared interactive experiences that engage people of all ages in the joy of play, the power of learning, and sense of community. Play is the best way to learn, and here at the Children's Museum of Rochester, each exhibit is intentionally designed as a robust educational resource that contributes to the well-being of children and the community. Our exhibits are created with an understanding of children's development, and they are aligned with our focus areas, which are STEAM, health and well-being, and cultural connectedness. These exhibits help foster exploration, creativity, discovery, innovation, and education. Last year alone, we served 81 counties in Minnesota, an average of 300 visitors a day, with 25% of those visitors being families served of low income. Throughout the year, the museum executed over 500 hands-on programs in our space with over 200 community partners, including the Rochester and surrounding public school districts, Head Start, Families First, and Jeremiah program, just to name a few. According to the Rochester Public School District, less than 30% of children in the Rochester area are kindergarten ready, a staggering statistic. The Institution of Museum and Library Services states that there is an influx of children starting school without language, cognitive, social, and emotional tools needed to succeed, and too many children are reaching the critical third grade mark, unable to meet the expectations for ongoing success. For many underserved families, museums function as community touch points, providing engaging pathways into knowledge and skill building. Children's museums offer a collection of experiences that span all knowledge and levels and foster interest-driven and project-based learning. That is why children's museums are committed to providing opportunities to learn through play that help develop important lifelong fundamental skills that benefit children and families. Our expansion will provide access to more hands-on exhibits, programming, summer camps, field trips, free nights for underserved families, and enhance our visitor experience as a whole. The Children's Museum of Rochester makes room for play by encouraging young learners to use their imagination, set challenges, act out stories, and transform spaces. The museum can make room for inquiry and experimentation by creating open-ended experiences. STEAM learning is about exploring and understanding the world and how it works and informing life choices. Over the course of the pandemic, the children's museums have become even more critical community assets, serving families in need of educational opportunities outside of the home and school. We see a tremendous need in our community, and it is our duty to see that this gap is filled. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I am open to any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hemker. Thanks for your work. Really appreciate you being here. So members, any questions or comments regarding this proposal? We'll see if there are any. And if not, then Representative Bolden, we're gonna give you the final word on this, on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just thank you to the committee for hearing this bill. It really is a great resource in our community, and I'm hopeful that we can secure these funds so we can expand, because it really is much needed. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bolden, and wishing you luck as well in your case in the Workforce Development Committee. I've been moving that along. And so, and again, Ms. Hemker, thank you for being with us. So members, we've now made it through the three individual proposals we're hearing. Again, expect that the bill that was going to be heard today will be heard the next day or two, and again, just informationally. So now we're moving to the big item, which is House File 4735. A delete all amendment was posted yesterday. This will be the proposed budget bill from our committee. So we're going to have a walkthrough of the bill. Tomorrow we will have another informational hearing on the bill and hear public testimony on it. And then on Thursday we'll bring the bill up. We'll vote on any amendments the members wish to bring, and then refer the bill to the Committee on Ways and Means. First, are there any questions about process from anybody at this point? And you know, I'll circle back to that before the hearing's over as well. I'm not seeing any. And then I do want to really encourage members. We won't have a substantive discussion on the bill today, but do listen carefully as we walk through it. And if there are clarifying questions that you have about the content of the bill, we can certainly do that. We want to make sure we all fully understand what's in it. So with that, I'm going to ask Ms. Mock, then I think that you're the person to call on now to walk us through the delete all amendment. Again, members of the public, this is posted on our committee website. You'll find it right on there, and you click the link and you can follow along. So Ms. Mock, please walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to walk through the DE2 amendment to House File 4735. So Article 1 is the child care assistance article. Sections 1 through 3 change definitions for the child care assistance program to allow foster care families, relative custodians, and successor custodians or guardians receiving North Star kinship assistance to be eligible for child care assistance. Section 4 makes permanent the temporary changes the 2021 legislature made to families, how families are prioritized on the basic sliding fee waiting list. Section 5 increases the maximum rate paid to child care providers for child care assistance up to the 75th percentile of the most recent child care provider rate survey, and those rate increases would go into effect October 3rd, 2022. Section 6 directs child care resource and referral programs to administer two programs, both of which were initially established by the 2021 legislature. The first is a child care one-stop regional assistance network to provide assistance to child care providers and those who want to become child care providers. And the second is a program to provide supports that enable economically challenged individuals to obtain the skills and training they need to begin a career in child care. These are also often referred to as the child care workforce development grants. Section 7 establishes the Brain Builders Bonus Program, which is a grant program for licensed family child care providers and legal non-licensed providers who care for infants. Section 8 establishes in statute a grant program to enable family child care providers to create shared services alliances. Section 9 directs DHS to provide grants to child care providers to improve their access to technology like computers and the internet. Section 10 is not supposed to be in the bill. That's my mistake, and it will be corrected in an amendment. Section 11 affects the stabilization grants for child care providers. So the section removes the sunset date for the stabilization-based grants and also removes the requirement that the grants are reduced between July 1, 2022 and June 30th, 2023. Sections 12 and 13 direct DHS to allocate money for the basic sliding fee program to account for the change in the definition of family and to account for the increased CCAP rates. Section 14 directs DHS to make a one-time allocation of about $75 million in fiscal year 2023 from the Child Care and Development Fund to account for the increased child care assistance payment rates. Sections 15 and 16 direct DHS to develop a cost estimation model for early learning and care, and also a child care provider wage scale, and then report to the legislature about how both could be used to set CCAP payment rates. And then Section 17 is a repealer related to the permanent reprioritization of the basic sliding fee waiting list. Moving on to Article 2, these are provisions that relate to child care licensing. So Section 1 adds an individual designated as the primary provider of care for a special family child care program to the definition of controlling individual for purposes of the licensing chapter. And this change is related to changes the 2021 legislature made to special child care or special family child care programs. Section 2 is a technical change directing DHS or a county to inspect licensed child care providers at least once each calendar year rather than annually. Section 3 also relates to changes the 2021 legislature made to special family child care homes.
And this section provides that a primary provider of care in these homes is authorized to communicate with DHS and counties on matters related to licensing, and also requires that this primary provider of care meets the qualifications that are in rules for group family child care providers. Section 4 makes several changes related to safe sleep for infants being cared for in licensed child care programs. Section 5 has educational and safety provisions that apply to licensed substance use disorder treatment programs that serve parents with children. Section 6 is also related to safe sleep standards and provides that every mesh-sided or fabric-sided play yard, pack and play, or playpen used in a licensed family child care program has an original mattress or replacement mattress provided by the manufacturer of the structure. Section 7 has another technical change of changing once each calendar year to annually. Section 8 allows DHS to increase the maximum group size and acceptable staff to child ratios for certified license exempt child care centers during national security, peacetime, or pandemic related public health emergencies. And then Section 9 allows DHS to conduct and administer pilot projects to test methods and procedures related to the child care regulation modernization efforts. And those efforts were established by the 2021 legislature. Article 3 includes the appropriations for the health and human service proposals in the bill. And Mr. Berg will go through the numbers in detail when he walks through the spreadsheet. But very briefly, I'll just mention what's in the article. There's money for data sharing and IT projects related to the, modernizing the various data systems that support early childhood programs. There's direction to put money in the base for several programs, including the Ombudsperson for Family Child Care Providers, the One-Stop Regional Assistance Network, the Child Care Workforce Development Grants, and the Shared Services Innovation Grants. There's money for the IT grants for child care providers. There's money for both financial hardship stabilization grants and also the base stabilization grants. There's money for DHS to develop the cost estimation model and the child care provider wage scale, and to establish the Brain Builder Bonus Program. And there's also money for grants to community-based organizations that support family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. Article 4 has forecast adjustments for the health and human service proposals. And then moving on to Article 5, these are the early education proposals. So Section 1 provides that the state appropriation for Head Start programs could also be used for program operations, infrastructure, or reconfiguration. This section also designates 10.72% of the total Head Start state appropriation to tribal Head Start programs and specifies an order in which the state appropriation must be distributed. Section 2 provides that a parent-reported developmental screening instrument, that instrument can meet the requirement for undergoing a developmental assessment as part of the early childhood developmental screening if the parent or child is unable to complete the screening in person for health reasons. Section 3 increases the amount of state aid paid to school districts for each child who is screened prior to or within 30 days of enrolling in kindergarten. Section 4 establishes a Grow Your Own early Childhood Educator Program. And under this program, schools, Head Start programs, licensed child care program, institutes of higher education, and other non-government organizations can receive grants to host, build, or expand early childhood educator preparation programs that lead to a credential or a degree. Sections 5 and 6 allow school districts to receive school breakfast aid for early childhood special education students to participate in voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. Sections 7 and 8 expand who can participate in early childhood family education programs by allowing adults who provide child care or caregivers to participate. Section 9 deletes a whole lot of obsolete language and also requires that the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care review and provide input on the work produced by the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force. Sections 10 and 11 both make changes to the Early Learning Scholarships Program. So Section 10 makes families that have a child who is in need of child protective services or placed in foster care eligible for scholarships regardless of a family's income level. And this section also changes a child's eligibility for scholarships to include all children from birth through age 4 to be eligible for the scholarships. Section 11 directs MDE to give highest priority for scholarships to children who are younger than 4 years old
and then also adds children who have an incarcerated parent to the priority list for scholarships. Section 11 also strikes the language that allows for Pathway 2 scholarships and allows the commissioner to establish exploratory efforts to increase parent education and family support services for families receiving scholarships. And then finally, Section 11 also provides that a scholarship cancels if a recipient has not enrolled in an eligible program within 3 months of receiving the scholarship. And that's a change from the 10 months that's currently in statute. Section 12 allows school districts to receive English learner aid for early childhood special education students. And then Section 13 adds school districts and charter schools to a list of entities to which the Commissioner of Human Services may make grants for the provision of services related to children's mental health. And then Article 6 has all the education-related appropriations. And Ms. Beckel will go through these in detail, again, when we go through the spreadsheet. But the appropriations include money for grants to fund social workers focused on early childhood systems. There's money for transfer to DHS for the children's mental health grants. There's money for the Grow Your Own program I mentioned. There's an appropriation for a grant to the University of Minnesota to provide scholarships for prospective teachers. There's money for a grant to the Family Partnership for an executive function curriculum pilot program. There's money to support Reach Out and Read, money for a grant to the Children's Museum, a matching grant to the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation for children's savings accounts. And then there's money to MDE to fund staff and operational expenses to support early childhood family education programs. And then additionally, there's an increased appropriation to the Early Learning Scholarships Program and to Head Start. And then the increase to Head Start program is specifically for early Head Start. And that is the DE2.
Ms. Mock, impressively done reading through that, and so grateful to you for pulling together the bill. So before we move to the tracking sheet, and we'll have another chance to do this, but just if there are any clarifying questions folks have right at the moment, members do please raise hands. I'm guessing probably not, but just want to be sure. And then if not, then we'll bring up our fiscal staff. And I think the way the order works is to have Mr. Berg go first, just in terms of the way it is, human services and then E12. So Mr. Berg, if you can walk us through, and members of the public, again, this is another link on our website. You'll see it, I think it says amendment fiscal spreadsheet, E2 fiscal spreadsheet. So you can follow along. So Mr. Berg, please.
Mr. Chair, I will share my screen here. Oh,
even better, even better.
If you will look to the highlighted column.
It may be, Mr. Berg, if you're able to zoom in a bit, I suspect that will help folks. I can do that on my screen, but somebody watching on video may. Maybe even another notch if you can. That's probably pretty good, I bet.
Okay.
For folks.
Let me see if I can move it over. I'm going to hide the governor's recs, and we'll, if there are questions, we can refer back to them, but I will make it even just a bit bigger. All right, and I'll try to refer to whether things were governor's recs or not. And the highlighted column, which is the 22-23 column, and then you'll see that there are 24 and 25 following it, but I'll work down from the 23 column. And starting on line 20, we are not doing, that's a governor's rec for forecasting the basic sliding fee child care program. That is not in the bill. On line 21 is where we have the money Ms. Mock mentioned, the change to the child, the CCAP maximum rate to the 75th percentile. There's only, these are general fund costs. This is a $51,000 general fund costs in 23, and then 267.24 million in the tails for that. There is a federal cost that will come to at the bottom of the section, but this is the general fund. The governor's recommendation on the CCAP change in the definition of a family that was mentioned has 56,000 in costs for administration in 23, and then is 37.5 million in the tails. On line 23 is the governor's item for CCAP stabilization and support. this bill spends $26.642 million in 23 and $990,000 in 24 and $3.07 million in 25. And I'll refer back, members maybe are more familiar, this is the way the governor characterized this program. But within this program are things that Ms. Mock mentioned. There is a $26.342 million, that's the first year. This is the hardship fund. Of the governor recommended a slightly higher number. But also then within these numbers are included the one-stop child care assistance network, the workforce development grants item that the governor had, the shared services alliance item, and those three, and then there is admin costs, the technology grants item, which is also in 23, and then there's some administrative costs related to that. So those are all rolled up in that line. Moving to line 24, there is interaction between the items and the CCAP max rate and the definition of family, and there's also a small interaction with the pre-K item that Ms. Beckel will mention, and an item that's in the Human Services Committee that deals with prospective budgeting in the MFIP and MFIP child care programs. So what this is each of those items has a cost, but when they all happen, it changes the total cost. And so there's a savings of $24,000 in 23, and then a net cost of $21.4 million in the tails that is on top of the individual cost for those items I mentioned, because they're all happening together. Last year, on line 25, the bill reprioritized the basic sliding fee wait list for 3 years using federal money. And this item makes that reprioritization permanent. So it has a cost of $15.441 million in 25. And members will remember that what this does is it moves people coming off of MFIP child care from the top of the wait list to the bottom of the wait list, and expands then the eligibility and basic sliding fee for more people. And some of those people who would be moved to the bottom of the list will stay on the MFIP program rather than this one, the BSF program. The child care stabilization base grants, Ms. Mock mentioned, there's $73.071 million in 23 and a total of $134.584 million in the tails. This is to continue the stabilization base grants that are currently funded in 22 out of federal funds, and it would extend them. Line 27 is the family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. That costs $3.167 million in 23 and a total of $6.766 million in 24 and 25. An item in that is only in the tails, the ombudsperson for family child care, that was started in last year's bill with federal money, and I think members have talked a lot recently, the ombudsperson was just recently named. The bill last year did not continue the funding into the tails. And so this item is a number to continue funding, that is to really switch the funding over from federal funding to state funding in 25. I will mention this is a plug number, and we'll have to change it a little bit to refine exactly what it will cost, but the intention here is to continue the office on state, out of state funds, so that there's no interruption in that office. On line 29 is, I believe, Representative Pryor's bill for the Retain Brain Builders program. It is in as a pilot at $2.5 million in 23, rather. And the line 30 is a bill that directs DHS to develop a child care cost estimation model, which is a different way to look at the cost of child care and possibly an easier and more straightforward way to accurately look at what child care costs rather than the method we currently use. That costs $378,023 and $172,024. Line 31 is the chair's project for IT, an IT and data project, which I guess I will say seeks to build out IT so that we can better share data about child care between agencies and counties. The chair would have a better explanation. That's what I would call it. This gets you to a human services general fund total of $115.841 million in 23 and a total of $487.246 million in the tails. The green section I will refer to now, I mentioned that in the governor's recommendations and in this bill, part of the cost of the CCAP max rate going to the 75th percentile is paid for with federal CCDF, that's Child Care Development Funds, that we currently have. This is not, you know, speculative. We actually have this money in hand. Both the governors and this proposal would spend $68.5 million of that money in 23 and an additional $6.834 million in 24 to reduce the general fund cost of the 75th percentile. I will mention the chair will probably be talking about an author's amendment and next steps. There is another item on forecasting basic sliding fee in, well, it's not TANF, I want to say. There may be a change in, Mr. Chair will have to talk, because that money we were talking about yesterday is TANF money. And so that there, the governor did use a TANF proposal that was in basic sliding fee, and there's some discussion about whether we would use some of that TANF money for one of our proposals as well.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Before you slide down, I'll see if there are questions that folks have for you. Again, we'll be able to circle back to have further questions for Mr. Berg and Ms. Mock, but it feels useful at each step to kind of pause just in case there's a clarifying question. I'll note for what Mr. Berg was just referring to that looks like, so after this all came out, Mr. Berg had noticed that it may be that there are additional funds that are available because of some interaction between federal dollars. In any case, figured that we make it here. I was going to understand that Mr. Berg talk with Lee Franson and share with members of the committee if it does turn out that we can make a change to the spreadsheet. Because it sounded like there may be some additional funds that would be available, state general funds, because of how the federal dollars flow. This all gets complicated, but rather getting into it now, maybe we have what we have in front of us right now. We'll understand it and then get it out to members ASAP as we clear that up. Are there questions for Mr. Berg regarding what we've talked about right now? And then otherwise we'll move to Ms. Beckel and then be able to have questions for all three of them. I'm not seeing any hands up. I suspect members want to get to the end and then ask questions. So we'll slide down to Ms. Beckel then, and thank you so much.
Mr. Chair, what I will try to do is stop sharing my screen, and I think Ms. Beckel will control her own.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So Ms. Beckel, we'll have you bring yours up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll share my screen now.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Berg was using the Excel spreadsheet. I'm just using the PDF, so this will look like what is in your packets. Picking up where Mr. Berg left off, lines 42 through 55 show all of the base funding items for this area in the early education portion. So the base funding for fiscal years 22 and 23 is $342.864 million, and the base funding in fiscal years 24 and 25 is $345.2 million. So now I'm going to go on to the change items that appear in the DE. On line 59, the House proposes $250,000 in fiscal year 23 only for the College Savings Account Program. Line 60 shows in brackets the developmental screening aid. This was a part of the full voluntary pre-kindergarten program, and so the actual costs for this will be carried in the K through 12 budget. But this is just to show what those costs are, but they do not impact the bottom line. Line 61, the governor recommended an early childhood family education formula increase. Because the Education Finance Committee has not gone with an across-the-board formula allowance increase, this is set to zero. Line 62, the bill proposes an early childhood family education office at MDE, funding that at $300,000 per year. Line 63, the bill proposes teacher licensing support of $177,000 in fiscal years 22 or in 23 and 24 only. Line 64, the bill proposes adjusting the average daily membership numbers for children with disabilities, early learners with disabilities, and this would have a cost of $441,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.147 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 65, this is similar to the above item, but it's just the adjustment in the breakfast aid. So this has a cost of $172,000 in fiscal year 23 and $344,000 in the tails. Line 66, the House proposes increasing the early learning scholarship appropriation by $110 million in fiscal year 23 and increasing it by $35 million in each year of the tails. Line 67, the executive function grant program included in the bill is funded at $450,000 in fiscal year 23 only. Line 68, the House bill proposes funding for Grow Your Own Early Childhood Educators. This was a recommendation in the governor's bill, but because it was tracked as part of a larger Grow Your Own appropriation, I carried this cost in the K through 12 budget. So that's why it is zeros here for the governor's position. But the House also funds it at $3.86 million in fiscal year 23 and $3.805 million in each year of the tails. And this money is transferred to the special revenue fund. Line 69, the House proposes funding early Head Start to the tune of $10 million in additional funding in fiscal year 23 and $10 million each year of the tails. Line 70, the House proposes the infant and early childhood mental health consultation funding of $3.759 million in fiscal year 23 and $7.518 million in the tails. This again is a transfer to DHS. Line 71, the House bill proposes mental health services for early childhood mental health consultation that would stay within the Department of Education. And this is $2.5 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.5 million in each year of the tails. Line 72, the bill proposes funding the Minnesota Children's Museum at $2 million in fiscal year 23 only. And finally, the bill proposes funding Reach Out and Read Minnesota at $250,000 in fiscal year 23 and $250,000 each year ongoing in the TALES. This, all the changes for the early education area of this bill total $134.159 million in fiscal year 23 and $112.896 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. This nets to a total of $250 million in fiscal year 23 and $600.142 million in fiscal years 24 and 25 of new spending. And that is the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. And I think that 600, the 142, Mr. Berg, is an error, and it should add up to 600 million even. Is that right, Mr. Berg?
Actually, sort of the reverse. It is an error. I discovered a formula error very late Sunday evening. It was too late to do anything about it. The 600, 142 is correct. We will, in the author's amendment, we will adjust to get to 600, but the number is right due to an error.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you so much. And big thank you to all three of these folks who worked so incredibly hard and well for us. So members, and you'll see that, and Ms. Beckel, thank you for as you're walking through that section, especially there were a couple lines where there's a bit of confusion just because of how our area intersects with others. And so I really appreciate you calling those out. I think there's one line where it looks like we're doing a proposal that the governor wasn't. It actually is a gubernatorial proposal. Another one where it seems to be the opposite. But we'll hopefully make that clear as we go. So members, questions, just clarifying questions again. We're going to have plenty of time to discuss this in the coming days. So for now, just if there's any questions folks have about the actual content of the bill, just to clarify that, those questions are welcome. Oh, I will wait just a minute on that. So I am not seeing hands up. So certainly I would encourage members, I know you'll be in touch with these folks with questions and certainly can ask any tomorrow as well. Members of the public, a reminder then that tomorrow we're gonna be hearing testimony on this proposal. You can sign up to testify by emailing the committee administrator, Sydney Spreck, by 4 p.m. today. Her information is right on our committee website and you wanna reach out to her today to make sure to do that. Again, I do expect tomorrow or Thursday, we'll just have another informational hearing or two on capital investment proposals. And then on Thursday, again, we'll hear any amendments to the bill. So I'm looking to see if there's anything else from anybody. Otherwise, we actually will have achieved what I said at the beginning and the ending at least a little bit early. So not seeing anything. So members of the public and all of our testifiers, so grateful to you for sticking with us. We'll look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow for testimony on the proposal. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much. Thank you.